Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
The sales estimates we'll be discussing in this episode are for the top 300 comics for August 2008, sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. This isn't going to be everything sold everywhere, but let's face it, the majority of comics are sold to comic book fans like us at comic book stores or online retailers every week. This is going to cover those sales trends, and I think we can get a lot of really interesting information out of it. Joining me, as always, for these is Bob. How you doing?
Very good.
I recorded with Chris the other night, and we touched a little on some of the comics stuff, and no doubt I think we're going to wind up touching a little on the trades this time. And part of that is there was one title that jumped between the lists, and that was some of the Gemstone stuff. It's kind of interesting. But what I found unsurprising, really, is what it comes down to. Marvel took well over half the units sold for the total of the top 300 comics this month. And, of course, between, you know, Secret Invasion itself, the plethora of Secret Invasion titles, the crossovers, the, you know, whatever else you've got. I mean, it's not surprising this was a good month for Marvel. They actually had 53.22% of the units sold for the top 300 comics and 52.64% of the dollars. DC still had a good month, but, you know, when your competitor does that well, you know, it impacts, you know, your percentages of the top 300. DC came in with 33.17% of the total units for the top 300 sold and 32.88% of the dollars. In terms of actual number of units and total dollars, this was not a particularly bad month in any way for DC. It's just, again, the size of the pie and who's got the most of it. You know, and then from there we drop off into the under 4% range for the other publishers. Now, one of them that dropped substantially, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, was Gemstone in terms of where it usually falls in the breakdown. And that's because three of its titles that would have normally been counted as comics for some reason moved over to the trade section. And that was Walt Disney's Comics and Stories number 693 and 692. And the other one was Walt Disney's Vacation Parade number 5, which really that one's bounced back and forth between the list a few times.
I mean, it's both of those are, you know, I'm pretty sure whatever the third one you're going to come up with is also, but I mean, they're square bound. They cost like $7 and they're all reprint material.
Exactly.
Which is essentially what a trade is. So I'm not surprised that Diamond might tend to characterize them that way as opposed to a comic book.
Well, again, I don't think it's a matter of it. Either a classification being right or wrong, it's just a matter of consistency. Prior to this month, Walt Disney Comics and Stories had always been considered a comic and usually fell in the last, you know, the lower third of the list. This time it came just outside of the top 10 for the trades, just because of the difference in scale there. And square bound, 64 pages, $8 or $7.99 price point. Yeah, that there's a legitimate case for that being considered a trade. I think the page count may be a little low for that, but I certainly don't think it's you know, a clear-cut case either way. But I found the fact that it bounced lists kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, topping the comics list, as anyone who's been in a comic store or, you know, heard anything about comics recently could probably guess, Secret Invasion number 5. This did 165,648 units. That's down about 9,762 units, or about a little over 5.5% from the previous issue. And frankly, 5 issues into an event title, that's not bad. You know, this has had, I think, fairly robust sales. Certainly it's not, you know, some of the quarter million units we've seen for like the first issue of that and a few other event type things. But frankly, the days of those kind of sales are long since over for the most part. How many of these are sitting on store shelves? Who knows? I imagine, though, that the majority of retailers are happy with the sell-through they've got based on the fact that they're continuing to order, you know, this far into the series, the number of copies they still are.
Right.
Now, likewise, top-selling DC comic is in rank number 2, and that's Final Crisis number 3. It did 123,812 units. That's down a little over 10,240 units, which is a little over a 7.6% drop from the previous issue. Still, this is doing very well for DC, and, you know, again, by the third issue, they certainly had time to gauge the reaction to the first issue, probably the second, if the retailers took advantage of the final order cutoff dates. So these are strong sales. Are they as strong as Secret Invasion? Obviously not. There's a 40,000 unit difference, again, for these titles.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, you know, 4 copies of Secret Invasion sell for every 3 of Final Crisis.
Yeah.
You know, there's a sizable gap there between the two. And that's not completely precise, but I mean, it's close enough. And we're not talking first issues anymore, so we're kind of like in the run here on both of them. Secret Invasion is a little farther along, obviously, but they seem to be settling into a groove here. I mean, there's no remarkable attrition. I mean, it's standard attrition.
I would say for Final Crisis, it's a little less than usual. Normally, it'd be about 11% or so for a third issue. But yeah, this is standard. You know, hey, people get in, they either lose interest or what have you. None of the, I mean, they're not dropping substantially. They're not in any kind of a free fall. They're not, oh my God, these things are tanking. These are doing pretty good. You know, to me, when I see stuff like this, particularly when we have the events going concurrently at Marvel and DC, virtually always Marvel comes out on top. And I see that as a reflection of a stronger, bigger fan base. Not to say they're doing any better comics or any worse comics or anything of the sort, but just in terms of marketing and brand awareness and loyalty, Marvel seems to have an edge in that regard. You know, and that's something that they've built up over decades. You know, I don't think DC's done anything wrong with that, but it does seem to be an area they could probably improve on. Because, I mean, geez, I mean, Superman, Batman, I mean, these are household names. Everyone knows these guys. There's no reason they couldn't be selling a few more copies. Let's see. Where do we want to go to next? I mean, we could just run down the top 10, but that gets kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, Batman is doing solid. You know, that the fact that it didn't have a drop from, you know, the last issue. It's like any time a comic is not in a negative delta from issue to issue, you kind of look at it and say, oh, you know, what's the story with that? And it's the RIP crossover here, right?
Yeah, and that was remarkably stable. I mean, it only went up by 346 copies, but that's still up.
It's an event that's not an event. It's a storyline. It's kind of a theme, but it's not kind of, they're not crossing over stories like that Ra's al Ghul one that they did recently where they kind of wove the story through all the Batman titles.
I would say it's an event for the Batman family. I agree. It's certainly not a crossover story, but DC actually tends to do pretty well both with the crossover stories and the events that are limited to a family of titles or one editorial office, presumably. And this month, I mean, Batman family stuff is doing great. You've got Batman itself. Nightwing nearly doubled in sales with the start of its RIP story. Robin is still going up a little. It's in its second part of the RIP story. Now, granted, each of these titles are telling totally different stories, kind of tangentially related to each other. Robin, I think, is the most tied in. And this is working very well for DC. Again, you know, when you've got a title that nearly doubles in sales, like Nightwing did this month and Robin last month, can't complain about that, you know. Now, Detective Comics is also part of this. It lost, about 1,300 units between issues. I think this is this the second part of the RIP stuff for that? I'm not sure which part of the story that is.
I'm actually confused to some extent by how these things are behaving, because when you don't have a storyline running through all the different titles and it's mostly just a theme and an RIP banner along the top, why does Nightwing double in sales? I mean, this is like, what is the coin? It's like, really? I mean, putting the RIP banner on it causes shops to, I mean, because I can't imagine that people all ran into their local store and like just, oh, you must buy me Nightwing all of a sudden. You know, it's like, but shops are ordering almost twice as many. Well, and I'm really curious as to why. I mean, because you don't see that all the time. I mean, just putting a banner on something, because we've certainly done it before, and you don't see that kind of an effect.
Certainly not across the board, but you look at when they put a Secret Invasion banner or a World War Hulk banner or a Civil War banner or an Initiative banner on Marvel titles. In a lot of those cases, we would see dramatic upswings. Now, in this case, you've got the cover image and a really short solicitation blurb on Nightwing mentioning it's a Batman RIP tie-in, Two-Face is involved, and who knows what else kind of a thing. I mean, not much to go on. As readers and retailers, you don't really know, is this going to be crucial to the RIP stuff or not, but this is one of the bigger marketing pushes DC's doing for the whole Batman RIP, nothing will ever be the same again kind of, you know, standard marketing ploys that focuses attention. People who were maybe interested in the Batman stuff but don't usually get it, that might be enough to point them to it. Retailers are certainly able to maybe leverage this to, you know, get people on the fence on these titles towards them. Do I think that they're going to sell out of these copies of Nightwing? I'd be really interested to know how the sell-through does for these titles across the board nationwide. Certainly, I think some stores are going to do very well with these. Other stores, not so much, depending on the nature of their customer base. But regardless of that, when this RIP stuff ends, in all likelihood, Nightwing and Robin are going to drop more or less right back to where they were. We're selling and trending and stuff prior to this. So I think it's not just that there's the banner on the cover, but the marketing push behind it and stuff, that this does actually increase sales temporarily. You know, I do think there are people going into stores thinking, wow, you know, I heard that this Batman RIP thing is big and it touches, you know, the Nightwing title, the Robin. I should check those out. But this is one where, to me, this makes more sense as an event, a themed event kind of a deal, than a crossover storyline in so much as part one, part two, part three. Because those, when I see differences of you know, tens of thousands of copies between chapters of the ongoing story that crosses titles, that kind of confuses me. Because, again, people are skipping parts of the story. Or at least, you know, retailers are expecting that. And not once have we ever seen tens of thousands of reorder units for some of those chapters when people said, hey, I've got to have chapter four of this ongoing, you know, arc that jumps titles. Right. But this is one where really the information I would like to have would come down to, you know, knowing how many copies the publisher printed, how many they kicked out to Diamond, how many Diamond then kicked out to retailers, how many retailers were then able to sell to readers, and to know kind of what the percentages are across those levels, and knowing, you know, again, what kind of an upswing are we really getting out of this on Nightwing and Robin.
Right.
But that information, not available, not likely to become available, which is unfortunate. Now, another one that saw an interesting bump in sales was Captain America 41, which went up 5,693 units to 84,988 units. And this is, you know, I mean, Captain America is doing great stuff. Brubaker has leveraged the death of Captain America so well, so effectively for so long, it's staggering. And, you know, I'm a little puzzled why this particular issue saw, you know, another increase or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't recall anything particularly remarkable about it. I don't think this is the one that had the other Captain America, although it may have been. But it just shows that, you know, you tell a good story, continue to tell a good story. Yeah, people are going to react to that and you know, it'll sell.
I'm just wondering if there are, like, behind-the-scenes things that we don't know about, like, you know, when you found out what the actual story was behind all those zillions of copies of Watchmen moving.
Oh, almost certainly in some of these cases, there you know, is other factors.
It's like, is there some kind of, like, incentive that they're giving the dealers to get them to order ridiculous quantities of some of these things? And it's just...
Well, I can tell you right now that in certain cases there are. I know for, I think, Ultimatum for like the third issue or something like that, if you order X amount of the first, you get, you know, a certain price break, things of that nature. So there are definite incentive deals. Well, like the one you were mentioning with Watchmen, Chris and I covered on the trades episode this month. But a quick recap here is... You know, we saw Watchmen shoot up to like 43,000 units of reorder activity and top the trade list. Part of the not part, but I would say the reason it did that is DC has a consignment program for it where retailers say, I want X copies. It costs them nothing to get them. They are returnable, or they can return them between December 1st and 30th. As long as they're in sellable condition, i.e. not totally trashed, gee, understandable restriction. So for really zero risk other than maybe what it would cost to ship returns back to Diamond, retailers can have as many copies of Watchmen in their store as they want. And there's no upfront cost, no... I mean, because before it's, do you have the cash flow? Can you afford to get the 10, 50, or whatever copies you might want? And for some stores, maybe that's too much of, you know, a cost. But now, not an issue.
Well, it's just the publisher standing behind their work. And, you know, I know that every comic shop I've gone into in the last month, it's about six or seven different shops, there's been a big stack of Watchmen trade paperbacks sitting in there. You know, it's just a big stack. I mean, like 20 or more. Copies.
I went to Austin Books, and they had a bookcase full of them. That had to have, like, at least 250, if not 300 copies, just on that one bookcase. And I'm sure they had copies elsewhere in the store. So, you know, that's a store that said, wow, I think between the big sale we're having that they did back on Labor Day or whatever, you know, that they could move copies. Now, I've since gone back, and whereas before they were pretty much all spine out, now they've got a couple face out, so they've actually sold quite a few copies. You know, this is something that, yeah, it's a publisher standing behind their work and taking the risk off the retailer and shouldering it themselves. Now, the irony is this is Watchmen. If a retailer doesn't know about Watchmen by now, should they be a retailer? You know. And then there are similar offers to varying degrees, certainly not the consignment level type stuff. But definitely various incentives that are offered to retailers by publishers from time to time. I don't know how often, how good, or you know how routinely. But that definitely influences you know how many copies somebody orders. Because if they can order another X copies and either get an incentive cover or an extra you know a discount or a cost break or whatever, and they're kind of close to that cutoff point, of course they're going to do it. But the math comes in as to... You know, how close are they to that? How much does it cost them to get to that level? Does it pay for itself? You know, the whole thing. But this is something where not being a comic book retailer, I don't have the level of access to that information that I would like to be able to factor all of that in. So it's, I mean, there's tons of factors that influence how things sell. And, you know, you can't look for just the simple solution and the easy answer. Because while... In some cases, there's going to be a predominant reason. There are other factors, either behind the scenes or just not as obvious, that come into play. So, the final Crisis Legion of Three Worlds first issue, it opened at 68,268 units. Not quite. I guess that's roughly a little under, a little over half what Final Crisis is selling. That's, again, huge discrepancy between the two, but... Based on that first issue, what I read, I'd say it's you know a tie-in almost in name only.
Mm-hmm.
But decent sales for that. That's a good sign. You know, a little below that, we've got the DC Universe Last Will and Testament first issue with 67,025 units. Superman Beyond, another Final Crisis thing, 63,102 units. And the first issue of Final Crisis Revelation at 58,401 units. And thank God Final Crisis is all self-contained in the miniseries. It's like, come on, do we need this many tie-ins? But, you know, these are reasonably high up on the list for DC. I mean, they don't have many titles above this other than Batman, Detective, JLA, and JSA. So, what else do we have that looks interesting? We saw a couple of bumps on titles like Daredevil, Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, She-Hulk, and in a few of these cases, I'm trying to think if any of these... Yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy one was a Secret Invasion tie-in, as was Nova and She-Hulk. Daredevil was not, and it's the final chapter of the Cruel and Unusual story arc, but I don't think that would account for the increase. It did have two covers, though. I'm not sure if the second was what the ratio might have been for that.
Am I seeing correctly that Halo Uprising is 46 weeks late?
Yeah, you're seeing that correctly.
These are the kind of things that a new Halo game comes out. So many people buy Halo. So many people play Halo. So many people love Halo. That if you can like actually put out something concurrent with that, which I think was the original plan since the last Halo came out about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You know, it would sell like hotcakes. And then when you just drop the ball severely and the thing comes out a year late, it's like, who cares? It's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when something is that late, it's, you know, it's staggering as to in this case, it may have been licensing issues. They may have had, you know, maybe Microsoft didn't sign off on, you know, part of the art or who knows what. But yeah, 46 weeks late, that's criminal.
Now, also quite a large drop on Walking Dead. I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's after a, you know, number 50. But usually that book grows from issue to issue, and to have a relatively large drop-off like that is unusual for that book.
Yeah, but if you exclude 50, that's up by about maybe a dozen units from 49. So, you know, it's in line with how the title had been doing other than the magic number 50th issue.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's actually dropped. Now, flip side, if you go up to rank 77, we talked earlier about how Robin had bounced up in sales substantially with 176. Now, with 177, that also came out in the same month of August, it's down about 23,553 units, putting it at 31,328 units, which is still up about 5,000 units to how it was doing as of around 174 and 173. And this is one that did not have the Batman RIP in the solicitation blurb. So that does go towards, you know, marketed as part of an event, and it sells.
Pavlovian retailers. You have a study. Yeah, it's like...
But again, retailers are basing this on past history of readers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying it's either right or wrong for them to do this, but you're right. It's a conditioned response, both in terms of the way the publisher presents the material and the way the readers usually react to it. So, I mean, I think right now Marvel or DC could create a I don't say a fake event, but, you know, a non-existent event, create a slick campaign for it, you know, make it a mystery as to what the tie-in is kind of a deal, and slap that on a bunch of covers, and at least for the first month, you would see bumps on that stuff till people got wise as to, hey, there's nothing really here. But hopefully they won't go and do that, because the minute we start getting Red Sky crossovers to that degree is the point at which the effectiveness of Batman RIP type stuff, Secret Invasion type stuff, those crossovers would really, you know, just plummet.
Well, like kind of like most of Marvel solicits for October.
I know. When I see the Dark Reign, everything classified stuff, it's like, well, wow, that's completely, you know, useless.
It's like, really, everything's classified. I could probably tell you exactly what's going to happen in those books, but...
Well, if they can't tell me what they're planning on doing, I'm not sure I care. And that's frustrating. What else do we have that looks interesting? Oh, that's what I want to talk about. Down at rank 137, we have Terry Moore's Echo number 5. It did 14,039 units. That's down about 68 copies, or a little under 0.5%. And this issue, or this series, started with the first issue selling around 16,360 units. Second issue dropped to 14,380. From there, the third issue only dropped to 14,205, so only about 175 copies. The next issue, number 4, dropped to 14,107, so under 100 copies, and now to 14,039 with number 5, again, under 100 copies, actually under about 70 copies. This one has very quickly seemed to level off around this 14,000 mark. I think this is a really, you know, great sign for it to have done that so quickly. And over on the trades list in rank 19 is volume 1 of the trade paperback, which sold 3,189 copies, which I think is very strong sales these days, particularly for an independent trade. And it's in the top 20. So this is, I think, a very good sign for the longevity of that title. And another one that seems to be leveling off pretty well is, where is that? The Boys. That one seems to be settling into about the 27,500 range for Dynamite. And it's their top seller by a wide margin. So it was a very good move for them to pick up that title when DC Wildstorm let it go.
Yeah. It's doing very well for them. It's certainly doing a lot better than most Wildstorm titles.
Yeah. Now, last month, the list cut off around the 4,200 point. This month, we've got, you know, 56 items that fall beneath that. And a lot of these are, you know, some of the Image titles, like Brit, like, what else do we have? Transhuman, the new Fire Breather series. You know, it was, well, Proof is another one. It was an unusually high cutoff point last month, and this month it's down more towards the norm of 2,040 copies is what it took to make the top 300. Now, near the bottom, we're also still seeing quite a bit of reorder activity for some of the, you know, earlier issues of things like Captain Britain and MI-13, Guardians of the Galaxy, Invincible Iron Man, Ultimate Origins, which, you know, it's been a while since Marvel had done the hard line of, hey, order what you want because we're not reprinting or overprinting or anything of the sort. You know, they're doing a good job of keeping things available if retailers want more copies. Down at rank 244 and 246, we've got Uncle Scrooge 377 and 378. These, I believe, are identical in format to those Walt Disney comics and stories that wound up on the trade list.
Yeah, that is curious how they take one and pull it off and then leave the others as comics.
Well, and these sold, let's see, 4,224 units for 378, and 377 of Uncle Scrooge sold 4,286 units. And again, this is in rank 244 and 246 on the top trades, or top comics, I mean. On the top trades list, those Walt Disney comics and stories, which sold 4,007 copies for $693 and $3,976 for $692, ranks 11 and 12. And, you know, so a few thousand less, and it's, you know, much higher in ranking just because it's on the other list, which is, you know, understandable, but that gives a sense of the scale. These would have fallen into around rank 250 and probably 250, 251, 252, right in that range. So not that much lower on this list had they been classified here.
Yeah. Some of the other ones down at the bottom that are kind of interesting because they're good books and they're just flying under the radar of a lot of people, you know, and it's like you said, like last month they fell off the bottom, but you know, like Brit, I love Brit. And, you know, it's just, it's way down here. It's like 3,851 copies. The Helm, another good book, Dark Horse. And it's way down. Freedom Formula, number one. Wow. You know, 3,717. It's just, I'm amazed. And, you know, Casey Blue, Beyond Tomorrow. It's a Wildstorm book.
Well,
these things are way low. And it's, these are not even being presented to readers, you know. And this is – it kind of goes back to our previews episode, right?
Yeah.
I'll give an example. Golly from Image.
Mm-hmm.
I only picked that up myself because Tim Rackrich told me about it. And I looked at it and I loved – I thought it was a really good comic. Now, I then – number two just came out. So I didn't have it pre-ordered. I picked up number one off the rack. Number two came out. Go to the local shop. Now, I didn't drive all the way up to Comic Toons and Toys. I went to the ones that are closer to my house, which is, as the story unfolds, you'll find out why I normally drive up to Comic Toons and Toys. It's like, go in and say, hey, Golly, number two came out this week. You know, do you have a copy? And, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. We didn't order any. Now, to their credit, we can reorder you one. You know, we'll get it in a few weeks. But it just didn't sell. Well, you know, is it not selling? It's just that people aren't going in to the shops and asking for these things. So when you get something that is off the beaten track, if you're not continually going in, adding it to a pull list or telling your retailer that you want it, don't expect your retailer to be risking their capital on stocking this indie comic. It's so important for people to be going out and saying, I want this comic.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
Telling their retailer.
Because, if you or somebody else recommends a book that I haven't pre-ordered, you know, it's got to be something that I feel strongly enough about to drive to the store and go look for. If I don't find it there, it's got to be something I feel strongly enough about that I'll ask, gee, do you have or can you get? And if they don't have it and they think they can reorder it, it's then got to be strong, something I'm so interested in that I'd be willing to drive back to the store to go get if they ever get it in. You know, it's... You know, there's a couple of hurdles there. And that's, you know, again, assuming I'm that interested in it, do they have it, etc. And, you know, that first issue of Golly from Image you were talking about sold 5,239 copies. So if it were evenly distributed, stores are going to have a copy and a half or a copy or two, you know. So you at least have halfway decent odds of at an indie-friendly store finding it, which is good. But you go a couple of ranks below that, and we hit in rank 229 from DC Comics, Family Dynamic number 1. It sold 5,083 units. Now, I've talked about this on the Weekly Comics Spotlight a time or two, and I'm loving this book. It just really clicks with me. I would give it a 5 out of 5. And, you know, with the acknowledgement, not everybody would, and that's cool. But I think the mistake that DC may have made on this is they put this as part of their Johnny DC line. Now, the Johnny DC line has moved away from the Batman Adventures, the Justice League Unlimited stuff, towards Tiny Titans, Super Friends, and other really kiddified, you know, things targeting an extremely young age group. Whereas I felt Family Dynamic was more along the lines of, again, the Batman Adventures, the Justice League Unlimited tone and style. I felt it was a bit more sophisticated without being adult, I guess would be the way to put it. It's certainly an all-ages book. But having marketed it as such, you know, as a Johnny DC title, you know, you look at how Batman Strikes, how Super Friends are selling. And they're at the, you know, 6,600, 6,700 range. You then look at a new title, okay, that's both a plus and a minus, but a new property, that's a minus, with new characters, no Batman, Superman, etc. Of course, retailers are going to order conservatively on that. They're going to order less than how other titles in that family are doing. That's how you wind up with a new title from DC starting at the 5,000 range, and DC saying, wow, if that's the first issue, you know, how do we think those other issues, you know, are going to do going forward? And you know, you work the math, and if you look at how that hypothetical average title sells, and then say, okay, you know, based on this starting value, how does it look that, you know, Family Dynamic number 2 and 3 are going to sell? Well, given again that average drop off, and no title is average, so I do not expect Family Dynamic to sell along these lines, but using that as a benchmark or baseline or guideline, number 2 is going to do around 3,978 units, and number 3 is going to do around 3,557 units. And those just aren't viable numbers, you know? I certainly don't fault DC for cutting the cord and saying, hey, let's only do 3 issues of this. I'm not happy with it, but it's a good business decision for them. So, you know, there's repercussions for how titles launch in terms of, are they strong enough? You know, should retailers have supported this more? Well, not if they didn't think they could sell it.
Even if you look at, like, KC Blue, though, I mean, and that's not in the Johnny DC family, but, I mean, look at where it's selling, down at 264. And I like this series. They're at least finishing out the 6-issue arc on it.
That's the difference, though, between maybe being under the Wildstorm banner and being part of the core office at DC, even though it's the Johnny DC line.
Yeah, the Kidify, Marvel does the same thing. I just can't even see them saying that they're doing books for – I mean, they're doing books for kids in the worst possible way, and I mean that literally. I mean, when you look at the Marvel Adventures books and, you know, Spider-Man's going out for an ice cream and playing Little League and stuff, I mean, these are just so ridiculously kidified. My kids wouldn't even want to read these books. I mean, it's like they're shooting at, like, I don't even know what audience they're shooting at. But even when my kids were extremely little, they did not want to read a story about Spider-Man playing Little League baseball with a baseball cap on and a baseball uniform over his Spider-Man. They wanted to see Spider-Man fighting a bad guy, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't understand what these guys think they're doing.
Well, and have they run these by any kids and gotten any feedback? I mean, part of what I'm really enjoying about Family Dynamic is it's not the Super Friends approach to comics either, in terms of the current, you know, 6 and under age range that they seem to be targeting with the current Super Friends, or even the Super Friends comic series from back in the 80s. Where it was still aimed towards a younger thing, but I would say, you know, 12 and under maybe or whatever. This is something that, as an adult, I don't feel, you know, insulted by. I don't feel they're talking down, whatever. They're just telling something that doesn't involve, you know, raping, pillaging, and plundering, and other things that are, you know, unsuitable for a younger age range. You know, too many of the comics I'm reading these days are needlessly violent, gory, or sick and twisted in some way, shape, or form. Not that there's anything wrong with any of that, up until the point you want to give it to somebody who's 14 or under, 12 or under, 10 or under, whatever. And, you know, as much as people are saying, oh, we need to get new readers, and for some reason they always equate that with younger readers, but, you know, let's say we want to get younger readers, which I think is good, but I think we also want to get new readers regardless of age. But if we want younger readers, we need to have something we can hand to them and not have them either scarred for life, have their parents flip out, or, you know, hit the headlines on, you know, CNN or whatever of, ooh, comics are ruining the future of America. We need something that's a bit more wholesome, a bit more accessible, a bit more age-appropriate. Figuring whatever you personally might find acceptable, there are going to be very conservative parts of the country and the readership. Well, not readership, but potential readership that could be horrified by that. And to have something that's, quote-unquote, safe, we need some of that, you know? And the fact that, you know, these things come out and do in the 5,000 range, that's unfortunate. Yeah, I read Family Dynamic, and I think Saturday morning cartoon, and a good one at that, you know? And, you know, flip side, it sold only about 1,000 copies less than the Legion of Superheroes in the 31st Century, number 17, did. And that is, or at least was, a cartoon. But, you know, it just seems that these days, launching a new series is incredibly hard. About two-thirds of this list have issue numbers of 12 or under, and I'm including things that have no issue numbers in that, you know, figuring they're more or less one-shots. And, you know, if two-thirds of the things are, you know, that early on in their run, that really implies a very transient sales in terms of the longevity of titles and just how hard it is to successfully launch a new title.
Well, look at Gorillaz, number one. I mean, this one, various people have been talking about on the forum and saying how good it is. And, you know, they really have been enjoying Gorillaz from Image, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there it is down at slot 272, issue number one, 3,230. Now, when an issue number one sells 3,200 copies, and it's supposed to be a 9-issue series, 12-issue series?
Nine.
I wonder, you know, where does the logical progression put that at by issue number nine? And can Image continue to be publishing? And it's $5.99 an issue, which can't help. And certainly it's twice as big. It's like 58 pages or something. So, I mean, you know, you're getting your money's worth for it, no doubt. But, you know, shops are not looking at that. They're looking at how much money they have to outlay to get that. And it's like, if it was a $2.99 book, might they have ordered more copies? Maybe.
Well, if it
might
was,
more, you know.
If it was a $2.99 book, I would have picked it up the last time I was in Austin Books. Because I went, I flipped through it, it looked okay, but I'm thinking 9 issues, $5.99 cover price, even if I get the future ones through DCBS at a 40% or so discount, do I need to be adding that to my pull list? If I'd had the ability to sample that title at a cheaper entry point, that might have gotten me over that hurdle and into the series. But, you know, if this has the standard drop of about 21% or whatever, you know, that next issue is going to do about 2,551 units. And again, that's if it's a mythical average title and nothing ever is. And then the one after that's probably going to drop another 11% or so on average, putting that at about 2,271 units. And given the price tag on Gorillaz, that one may actually see a sharper drop on the second issue. You know, because, again, that threshold to do I like it enough to pay the cover price is a bit higher on that. But, you know, one of the comments you made on the forum, Bob, about this title, I believe, was that you were a little gun-shy on it because so many titles have, you know, cut short the run and gone to trade. And certainly, you know, I'd be a little annoyed if I'd paid for two or three issues at $6 a shot and then had to essentially rebuy them in a trade if this doesn't complete the 9-issue run.
Right, and I completely admit that that's a bad attitude to have. I freely admit that it will drive a self-fulfilling prophecy. But on the other hand, I have been burned so many times on buying indie books that I really like, and they get a couple of issues in, and then they get canceled. And they put out a trade where they collect the issues I already bought plus all the ones I didn't buy, and I end up having to rebuy the same material again.
Well, I've been
or worse even is they just go away and you never get to see the end of the story.
Yeah, I've been burned in both of those respects before, and I agree it does almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the question I would have then is how to prevent that from being a self-fulfilling prophecy and, you know, how to tackle that issue. You know, again, family dynamic. Going to be 6 issues, we're only getting half of it. And, you know, that adds to the potential stigma on the John ADC line of, you know, are they going to finish what they start? You know, are they going to deliver what they promise? Certainly on Image. And this is no knock against Image. It's nature of the beast for their business model. You know, if Gorillaz or any other title isn't profitable enough to cover the, I think, $2,500 fee that Image charges to solicit the title, is this going to either go to trade? Is it going to jump to a self-published thing? Is it just going to stop? You know, I've had a number of titles both from Image and, again, tons of other publishers, including Marvel and DC, where I committed more to a series than they did.
Well, look at what Shadowline, and it's like, this is going to work against Shadowline for me. M-Theory by Dwight McPherson. We talked about it on our show. Really cool-sounding concept. Three-issue series, right? And yeah, I don't know what the orders were on it, but first issue's coming out, and I think it's actually coming out this week even. And Shadowline canceled it after the first issue because orders were not high enough. It wasn't, you know, it was Shadowline just said, oh, we're not putting any more out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I bought the first issue, and am I going to get – well, I mean, Dwight's going to self-publish them or something. So, I mean, I can at least, you know, see, or he'll put them on Wowio or something like that. But, you know, for me, unfortunately, this is going to work against any other indie creator who chooses to go with Shadowline as their publisher.
Yeah.
Because I now see a pattern with Shadowline of doing this kind of behavior. And I'm going to be really, really gun shy about ordering any miniseries from Shadowline moving forward, because I'm going to buy a first issue and then they're going to pull the plug on it and I'm going to be left high and dry.
Well, and this is one of those things we were talking about, you know, behind the scenes impacts on sales, and this kind of psychology of, you know, hey, I've been burned before, or and gun shyness and stuff like that is I think a major factor for the sales trends that is hard, if not completely impossible right now to quantify, because I know there are certain things, certain publishers that I'm really unlikely to buy something from regardless of the quality because I feel I've been burned by the publisher.
Yeah, and they have a really bad track record. You know, it's just like I almost rather buy a book from just some guy who's got his own company, you know, is putting it out himself, you know, like, I mean, certainly not a in the numbers, but you know, like when Terry Moore is putting something out under his own Abstract Studios line, or Dave Sim putting out Cerebus, or you know, something like that, or you know, Jeff Smith putting out Bone or Rassel through Cartoon Books. I mean, I know that those guys are going to put out the next issue. You know,
yeah, but they built up
their book.
They built up that track record. We've seen them put out their own issues time and time again over a prolonged period.
Right, but even regardless of that, you know, take look at a new one, Adam Withers and Comfort Love, who are putting out this this comic called The Uniques.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun book, but they're self-publishing the book, or Bushy Tales by Lynn Workman and Dave Beatty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're self-publishing this book. So at some point, or Martheus Wade, who puts out the Jetta.
Yeah, good example.
I mean, they're not selling huge quantities, but I know that they're creators who are passionate about their book, and they will put out another book at some point when they create it. You know, and they're going to self-publish it and everything, but I'll be able to get another book. And I don't have to worry about Shadowline making the decision to pull the plug on this creator, you know, and I'd rather support that independent guy than someone going through a company that's got a track record of aborting things in midstream, especially when it's like I can see like, okay, Gorillaz, 9 issues at $5.99 a pop, you know, okay, well, that's a hell of a commitment, you know, but, you know, M-Theory, 3 issues for $2.99 a piece, you know, come on, you can put out issues 2 and 3.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, and part of it going along the lines of supporting particular creators and stuff, one of the things I really enjoy about going to conventions, listening to interviews on podcasts with creators, is getting a feel for their passion and kind of their mind of mindset of why they're doing this. Because using Martheus as an example, I am positive there will be a future issue of Jetta, because I cannot imagine Martheus not doing another issue. He is so passionate. He needs to get that story out on a fundamental level. It will come out regardless of how it's selling, because, you know, it's his psychology. I think he needs to do that. Same with the Bushy Tales crew. Lynn and Dave and
Micah,
thank you. Blanking on the name. She's going to kill me for that, too. You know, they're going to do more of this stuff. It's a question of how soon, when can they fit it into their schedule, because they've got, you know, like the rest of us, day jobs, lives, etc. But they're passionate about it. They've got stories they want to tell. And, you know, certainly they want to be making money at this. They'd love to be making tons of money. But there are people who are doing this stuff because they enjoy comics. And it's not just the number crunching of, did this sell X copies? Did it pay for the cost of the content, the printing, the publishing, the advertising, if any, is done? And gee, it didn't. Okay, cancel it, move on to the next. You know, there is that level of math that needs to be done. And, you know, part of why we do these episodes is to show some of the available data and to help explain, again, why did DC cancel or end early, I should say, Family Dynamic? Was that a bad move or a good move? It was, unfortunately, the right move for DC to do. Now, hopefully Jay Torres can take the property elsewhere, be it to Image, self-publish, whatever, and we can see more. You know, flip side, DC's also the company that, you know, is doing a consignment program on Watchmen, which completely eliminates risk. So they're a company that can stand behind some of their products, you know, if there's a business case, whatever, for them to do that. And it behooves us as readers and fans of comics to understand why these companies are making the decisions they're making, why these creators are making the decisions they're making as to where to publish, when to publish, what to publish, and to support that as best we can, to be as understanding as we can as to why they're going to cancel some title we love to do, you know, an eighth spinoff of major event du jour. You know, they got to do what sells. These are business decisions. So it's really frustrating to look at the bottom of the list to see how many of these titles, I think, in some cases, are just completely brilliant that I'm reading. How a couple of these are, you know, ones that in my heart of hearts, I know there is a bigger audience for that simply isn't finding it, either because it's not at the local retail store, or either the product, or for that matter, the reader. It's not, I mean, I certainly don't want to be placing blame on, oh, the retailers aren't supporting this or whatever. If they thought they could sell it, I believe most retailers would carry it, regardless of what it is. You know, it's a matter of convincing your retailer that if you want, be it Gorillaz, be it Family Dynamic, be it Proof, you know, or anything else.
Read any of these things down here at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, one that, you know, I look at Knights of the Dinner Table.
Yeah.
As a good example of this. Now, Knights of the Dinner Table is selling in comic shops 3,300 copies, 3,303 here at rank 271. Now, actually, this is a special. This isn't even a regular issue. This is that Paintball War.
The regular one is up a little above, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, my point is that if this book is selling, and they've got a very loyal fan following. I have got to imagine that the people who are reading Knights of the Dinner Table are telling their retailer, hey, I want Knights of the Dinner Table. And this book has got to sell, I'm going to guess, at least as many copies as they're selling here through gaming stores.
Oh, I think so, even more so.
Yeah. I would imagine that the total run on that's got to be up around 8,000 at least. Which, you know, puts it up in the top 200, you know, on here. It puts it up certainly up around, you know, the Star Trek books from IDW. They are Star Treks and Transformer books from IDW. Most of the Wildstorm books.
Yeah.
You know.
But that's a title that, you know, I've seen Knights of the Dinner Table in comic stores for ages. Never once really considered picking it up, didn't, you know, have any interest in it. It was just another title out there. You know, didn't really know what it was to a large degree until we talked about it on the Weekly Comics Spotlight. You pointed it out, said, hey, I want to talk about this, go pick up a copy. I did, I liked it, I'm now getting it. And, you know, it comes down to information. You know, I was not informed about that title and that it would be a good title for me. You know, I think a good title for any gamer. And you know, I look at things at the bottom of this list, and even in some cases higher up on this list, and I'm thinking, if more people who would like this book had information about this book and access to this book, they would get it. Toopy Dupes is another example of that. You know, that's one that I had seen, you know, at Comic-Con for ages. I'm certain I've seen it, you know, on the store shelves when it was coming out. Never once considered getting it, etc. One of our listeners, I forget which one, recommended it to us. We read it. We both loved it. And now it has two more readers, you know, if they can get another issue out. And the if they can get another issue out is if it's financially viable for them to get another issue out. You know, I'm certain that Kevin McShane wants to and is going to at some point. Again, that seems to be, you know, the going back to the level of passion that, that creators can have. But it's also got to be worth his time financially to do it. So, you know, when I see so many of these comics selling less than I think they are capable of, when I see so many of them continuing to go down in sales, sometimes, you know, in scary amounts, you know, it's very, you know, sobering and in some cases heartbreaking. And also when I see some of these coming out so egregiously late, in some cases I know it's because, you know, it took the creators a little bit of time just to work up the cash reserves potentially to print some of these. In other cases, I think it just took them a while to, you know, get the work done. I mean, we had a number of things on this list that were 24 weeks, 26 weeks, 32 weeks late. You know, it's, you know, or 40, or we already talked about the one that was, what, 42 weeks late. It's like, come on. You know, in some cases, there are 46, I should say, with Halo. You know, there's definite stuff behind the scenes influencing a lot of both the timeliness, the sales factors, everything. But, you know, this was another month where, you know, issue-over-issue losses, you know, outweighed issue-over-issue gains. And again, this is issue-over-issue, not month-over-month. But the issue-over-issue, you know, losses and gains were over 500,000 units lost compared to the previous issue of any title that had a previous issue to compare to. You know, that's, to me, major downward trend. Real quick on the cover prices, I think both of us are in agreement that eventually in the probably much sooner than later time frame, we're going to be seeing a shift towards a higher cover price than $299. 174 of the items out of the top 300 were at that $299 cover price. 66 are at that $399 cover price, 19 are at the $350 cover price, and 13 are at $225. So, you know, looking at these sales figures and stuff, I do think we're going to be seeing a shift towards higher prices as the sales continue to decline on some of these. And I'm really worried to see what the reaction from the retailers and readers is going to be. You know, if and when, and really it's a when, not if, DC and Marvel get to the point where they have to raise their cover prices. Because even if they raise them to $350, and I see that as the next possible step, and I think $399's a more likely step.
Oh, Marvel's already doing it a lot. I mean, most of their miniseries that are coming out and, you know, things are all at that $399 point, and that's what I'm kind of like looking at and saying. And I'm making decisions, man. It's like Marvel Apes, you know. It's like, yeah, it's an okay book. It's not $399 okay.
Yeah, yeah. Again, you raise the price, you raise the barrier to entry, and the perceived quality or enjoyment level that the reader needs to get out of it to justify that cost. You know, I guarantee you, if I were not getting my comics through DCBS at a substantial, you know, 40% discount, I would be getting a lot fewer books. If prices go up to $399, I will be getting a lot fewer books. Now, part of it is I'm planning on getting fewer books anyways, just because I'm starting to run out of space and time to read these things. But, you know, the economy is not particularly great, and I think we're getting to the point where a lot of people are having to cut back, and, you know, these sales are reflecting that. You know, out of these top 300 comics, I think I got about 170 of them. which is far too many, at least in terms of time to read, and as far as some of these publishers are concerned, probably far too few.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, they're here to sell stuff. You know, it's nice, though, to see things like The Boys leveling off. It's really nice to see a new title like Terry Moore's Echo having very quickly kind of settled into a comfortable sale, comfortable and, I think, exceedingly healthy sales level for that book. And, you know, hopefully we're going to see other titles kind of fall into that groove and do pretty well. One other one I'm looking for real quick and not... There it is. At rank 179, got issue 10 of Sword from Image at 9,349 units. That's down about 12 copies from the previous volume. And the way the process works is statistically, you know, with the rounding for the estimates and so forth, it may not have changed at all. It's more or less a wash as to how it's selling. And looking at the history on that, that one's been fairly reliable, really, since that third issue. It's been on a little bit of an upward trend, by and large. And that's another one where I would imagine once they're done with this series and the Luna Brothers go on to another one, they're going to have, you know, a stable fan base and enough to support their work. You know, we need more stuff, more success stories like that. So, buy comics. Read comics. Enjoy comics.
You just made me think of that, the commercials Marvel ran.
Oh.
Buy comics. That's like, oh yeah, let's do a really vague commercial that, you know, embrace change, and it doesn't tell you specifically what comic to buy. You don't even know you're necessarily seeing a commercial about comics. It doesn't tell you where to go buy a comic. It's like,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because
how does somebody define a waste of money?
Tim posted on our forum, hey, Marvel's doing commercials. I'm thinking that's great. All for mass market, you know, awareness and advertising and stuff of comics. I watched that commercial, particularly this time of an election year. It started off feeling like a really bad political commercial. Then they mention our alien friends, and I'm thinking it's a really bad political commercial, maybe pushing a new Alien Nation movie. And then they show what I knew to be Skrulls, what you know to be Skrulls, but the average people are going to know to be random green-faced aliens with funny chins. And then it ends. You're right. It didn't mention Secret Invasion. It didn't mention comics. It didn't mention Marvel. It didn't mention where to go find comics. It, frankly, didn't even get me the least bit excited about Secret Invasion. And I'm reading and enjoying it.
Well, it's not a Secret Invasion commercial. I mean, what it is it's like really telling us at the end of Secret Invasion, sorry, spoiler, you can stop listening now, but this is conjecture on my part, so it's not, I mean, but it seems pretty obvious. Skrulls are going to be hanging around after Secret Invasion. You see all these ads in the Marvel comics of, like, you know, a Skrull kid in a baseball uniform, a Skrull mother holding an apple pie in the kitchen or whatever nonsense. It's just they're going to do an Alien Nation thing. And what they're going to do with the Marvel universe after Secret Invasion is over is there's going to be a whole bunch of Skrulls through whatever facility are going to stay on Earth and are going to integrate into society like the newcomers in Alien Nation.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And
which is not that intriguing to me because it's been done before.
Well, it also is along the lines of, are they going to keep the Registration Act or not? Oh, guess what they did. So, you know, they're I think trying to play against expectations of, oh, they're not going to change anything. Well, now, of course, they're going to, you know, make it seem like they're changing things. But that was a waste of marketing dollars and not something that I think will ever be able to look at these numbers and say, yes, they increased because of that. That's assuming we see any increases to begin with.
Yeah. What would increase? I mean, people don't know. I mean, a commercial. I mean, I'm not a marketing person. Tim's a marketing person. He has a marketing background. Maybe he can specifically address this, but it's like, it seems to me like if I'm doing marketing, I want to at least let people know what it is they should be buying. Now, maybe if that's the teaser to what's going to be a huge intensive campaign, you start out really vague and cryptic, but I really don't see in the cards there being a huge intensive campaign, you know?
Well, I would hope for any kind of marketing push like that, you've got some sort of success criteria and some kind of metrics you can use to determine if you've met that or not. Now, certainly, Marvel's going to have internal metrics that we don't have access to that they can use to determine if that worked or not. Flip side, no doubt, DC had similar metrics for measuring the success of the advertising push they did for the Minx line that they're ending at the end of the year. That was one where they spent money targeting the young female readers, and, you know, it obviously didn't pan out to the level they needed it to or wanted it to. Because not only are they not going to continue the advertising, presumably, at the end of the year, they're certainly not continuing the Minx line. So, yes, I think marketing can work, hopefully should work, will work, whatever, but I have yet to see any clear-cut case where somebody has shown me, hey, this is the advertising push we did, and here is the incontrovertible proof that that advertising push increased these sales numbers. You know, there's been some discussion on this in the forum and stuff, and I certainly agree that, you know, marketing comics, both in general and specific comics, is needed and would help, you know, reverse this downward trend we're seeing on most titles. But it's hard to sometimes get that direct cause-effect relationship established and going. But hey, you know, maybe this Marvel stuff will pan out, maybe we'll get more readers. Certainly, I think we've seen the success of internal marketing towards comic readers with, you know, again, Secret Invasion, Batman RIP, and things of that nature, and that can work. So, I mean, there's hope. But yeah, that commercial I was very disappointed with. Anything else, or does that do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.